Hi, this is Mary Beth Averill, one of the co-facilitators of the Academic Coaches Group. I have been an academic coach for about 23 years, and I specialize in working with academic writers. In addition to offering individual sessions, I have a weekly All But Dissertation group and a weekly phone group for faculty who want to get some articles submitted or a book written. I'm speaking to you from beautiful Eugene, Oregon. And my co-leader is Hillary Hutchinson, who will introduce herself next.
Hello. I am Hillary Hutchinson, and I am also an academic coach. I work with new, overwhelmed professors who need to pull it all together and want to actually enjoy their academic life. I work with academics at all stages of their careers to transition to the next phase. I have teleclasses and workshops available on writing and effective communication, coping with stress, handling change with resilience, getting organized for productivity, and goal setting, as well as how to pull it all together. I am speaking to you from beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. So, today's call is going to concentrate on Prochaska's stages of change. First, I'm going to go through the basic agenda for this call, and then we'll talk about what the stages of change are. First, who developed the stages of change and what are they? Two, why does knowing about stages of change matter to an academic coach anyway? Three, how can we determine what stage our clients are in? Four, what are some powerful questions helpful to our clients and to each of us at each stage? We'll be interspersing case examples throughout this presentation. So, to begin, what are the stages of change? This change model was developed from a book called Changing for Good, A Revolutionary Six Stages by James O. Prochaska, Carlo Di Clemente, and John Norcross, which was published in 1994. James Prochaska was at the University of Rhode Island, and he and his colleagues developed a trans-theoretical model beginning in 1977. It's based on an analysis of different theories of psychotherapy, hence the name trans-theoretical. The original model consisted of four variables: preconditions for therapy, the process of change, content to be changed, and therapeutic relationships. By 1997, there were five core constructs, and today the list is six. As you can tell, this process of change model was developed for people with addiction problems. We've modified it for coaching, and in particular for use with academics. Prochaska and Di Clemente did not think they were starting a revolution, even though that's the title of their book, but apparently they did, because the model is now widely used in counseling and addiction programs. Its key features are dealing with intentional behavior change, viewing change as a process and not an event, viewing the process as characterized by a series of stages of change, and realizing that a person typically cycles through the stages and may spiral in and out of various stages over the long haul. I'm going to list the stages and then discuss each one more thoroughly. Stage one, pre-contemplation. Two, contemplation. Three, preparation and planning. Four, action. Five, maintenance. Six, termination. In stage one, pre-contemplation, your client is basically in the ignorance is bliss phase. They are not currently considering any change at all. They may be practicing denial, I haven't got a problem, rationalization, making excuses, intellectualization, they don't want to engage in the problem emotionally, projection, saying other people actually have their problem, or displacement, by blaming other people on their problem. An example for academic coaches would be a brand new professor who continues to say, tenure is not a concern for me right now. As a coach, your job can be to validate their lack of readiness and clarify that it's their decision to act. You want to reevaluate their current behavior and encourage self-exploration rather than action, and help them understand and personalize the risk of not taking action. In stage two, contemplation, your client is basically ambivalent about change. This is when they're sitting on the fence. This is the procrastination phase. Yes, tenure is a concern for me, but I'm not willing or able to begin within the next month to work toward that. Basically, again, as the coach, you want to validate their lack of readiness for change, clarify that the decision is theirs, encourage them to evaluate the pros and cons of behavior change, and identify and promote new positive outcomes so that they begin to have an expectation of success. Stage three, preparation. Here, the client has begun to have some experience with change and is trying to actually change by testing the waters. For instance, tenure is a concern for me. I'm clear that the benefits of taking action outweigh the drawbacks, and I'm planning to start working on this within the next month. Here, your client is making change a priority. You want to help them identify and assist them in problem solving, especially as to what obstacles might be getting in their way. You want to help them identify social support and create a time frame for getting their project finished. You also want to verify that they have underlying skills for the behavior change and encourage small initial steps. In stage four, the action step, the client is actually beginning to practice the new behavior. They need to practice this behavior for at least 3 and possibly 6 months to really make an effective change. Your job as the coach is to help them focus on restructuring cues, and social support. Help them bolster their own sense of self-confidence and efficacy for dealing with the obstacles as they come up and look for alternative, healthy ways of dealing with setbacks. Help them combat feelings of loss and reiterate the long-term benefits. This is an interesting one for dissertation writers particularly, because oftentimes people have a difficult time of letting go of a project that has been hanging over them for such a long time and has taken over their life because they don't know what to do with themselves when it finally goes away. So your job as a coach is to help them learn to control both their emotions and the environment. Stage five is maintenance. It sounds exactly like what it is. This is when the client is committed to sustaining a new behavior, having already practiced this new behavior after several months. You want to plan for follow-up support and teach them about giving themselves internal rewards. Stage six, termination, is the behavior has become internalized and the client has a new self-image. For instance, before they had an image of themselves as a procrastinator. Now they have an image of themselves as a productive writer. At this point, your job as the coach is to help them maintain cognitive awareness as the situation around them changes, to make sure that they stay with their new plan. Now, some people think that you can't actually ever terminate because it really is just a continuing maintenance. And this leads us to the problem of relapse. Another way of thinking about relapse is to simply call it recycling. In other words, you take one step back and two steps forward. Most people do need more than one attempt to change. They do resume old behaviors and then become discouraged. So your job is to help them look forward and say, what was the trigger for that relapse? What's going on in terms of motivation and current barriers? What other coping strategies can you come up with so that you're not triggered again? And that tells you pretty much all of the basics about Prochaska's model.
So this is Mary Beth again. We're going to be talking more about how you would apply these stages of change to academic coaching and why knowing about stages of change matters. One of the things that can happen if you push a client, or even if the client pushes him or herself too quickly into action, is that there can be a lot of frustration for the client and the coach. The client may not be ready to follow through. So it's important to assess with the client how ready they are for making a change in their lives. Remember, action was the fourth step of the six stages of change. So it's not real early in the process. Let me give you an example to illustrate. I worked with a graduate student who came to me wanting to finish his dissertation. He hadn't worked on it for a while, and he had this like sense of burden about it, wanting to finish it. But he wasn't doing anything. He was definitely not in action, not even in planning any steps for action other than coming to see me. So we spent a couple of sessions working on this, trying to help him find some action steps, but he never followed through on any of them. So one day I said to him, well, what do you want in your life? And he had a long list of things. He wanted to own a house. He wanted to have a job that he liked. He wanted to have a partner. He wanted to have a child. He wanted to have friends. All of those, which were really very reasonable things to want. And I said to him, those sound like great goals, but I noticed that finishing your dissertation wasn't on the list. What do you make of that? Well, as we discussed it more, it turned out that he wasn't really invested in finishing his dissertation. He just thought that other people would think badly of him if he didn't do it. So he really wasn't ready to make a change about this. He had a lot of shoulds, but no real motivation. So you might see him as in the pre-contemplation stage, not really ready to change. And in fact, I worked with him, and he did realize all those other goals. And one of the things that we worked on in the coaching was finding some ways for him to give up his idea that he needed to finish his dissertation or he would be a bad person and replace that with some healthier self-image.
Thanks, Mary Beth. I want to give you a tool, an assessment tool, to help determine what stage a person is in. Now, if you would like to get a copy of this assessment, please either write to me, Hillary@transitioningyourlife.com, or write to Mary Beth at Write on MBA, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E on MBA, at AOL.com. I suggest that if you're going to use this tool to help you figure out what stage a client is in, that you try it on yourself first to figure out how this works. The self-assessment is in two parts. The first half of the page is four questions that can help you decide what stage you are in. And the second half is self-assessment statements on are you ready for change and moving into action. The four questions to decide what stage you are in are, I solved this problem 6 months ago. 2, I have taken action to solve my problem in the last 6 months. 3, I intend to take action to solve my problem within the next month. 4, I am intending to take action within the next 6 months. When you get the handout, you will see how to score the answers. And depending on which answers you get, you will be either in the pre-contemplative, contemplative, preparatory, action, or maintenance phase. With regard to the self-assessment statements on moving into action, there are 16 questions where you are asked to decide which statement is true or false. After you've finished deciding that, you will add up the total. If your total score is below 21, you are still in pre-contemplation. If your score is over 21, you are in contemplation. If your score is 28 or more, you are ready to take action to change. Mary Beth, are we ready to talk about powerful questions?
I think we are. So as you may know, one of the important tools that coaches use with clients is powerful questions. And so I have some examples of powerful questions that you can use at each stage along the way of the stages of change. And these are also in a handout. So if you would like a copy of them, feel free to email me at writeonmba.com or email Hillary@transitioningyourlife.com. So, the first stage in pre-contemplation, and here are some of the questions that one would use in this stage. How is whatever the issue is affecting your life? For instance, how is not working on your tenure file affecting your life? What would your life be like if you didn't have this hanging over you? So what would your life be like without it? Which I would then change in the case of somebody who's thinking about tenure. What would your life be like without it? Have you ever wondered about the issue? Have you ever wondered what it would take to get your dissertation done? And what would it take for you to let go of, either what would it take for you to let go of your dissertation and not do it, or what would it take for you to let go of the barriers to finishing your dissertation? So those are kind of pre-contemplation powerful questions. Sometimes clients don't have an answer for them right away, but what I've noticed about powerful questions is that even if people don't have an answer, they often say, wow, that's a good question. I'll have to think about that. So sometimes people will answer the powerful question right away, and sometimes you can pose it as an inquiry, that is a kind of homework, something they'll think about or journal about between the session where you pose the question and the next time you meet with them. So the next stage, contemplation, has several questions that you could use there, too. For instance, what are the benefits of having things stay the way they are? What are you willing to sacrifice for the sake of whatever the issue is, for the sake of getting tenure? What are the pros and cons of making a change in your behavior? How would you find out more about the issue? So how would you find out more about what it's going to take to finish your tenure file? What would you have to give up to get unstuck? What small step could you take, and what will you do next? Stage three is the planning or preparation stage. So here's the stage where you're asking people to think about what action steps they're going to take. And powerful questions might be, what will you do? When will you do it? What will this step look like if it works or if it's not working? How committed are you to making this change? And where is your plan likely to run into obstacles? So it's good to, in the planning stage, to think about what might get in the way of action when people start to take their action steps. At the action stage, the questions are, if you were at your best, what would you do right now? How will you choose to be this week? What are your next steps? How will you know to ask for support? Who are you becoming as you work on this project? So, for instance, somebody came to me. She wanted to work on her tenure file. We talked about how that issue was affecting her life and what would life be like if she didn't get tenure. We talked about the pros and cons of getting to work versus putting it off longer. We talked about what are the steps that she would have to take to complete her tenure file and how committed she was to doing them and what kinds of obstacles she might run into. And then when she was ready to go into action and I asked her, well, what's your first action step going to be? She was like, well, I don't know. But it was clear to me from what other work that she'd done that she probably was ready to take action. She just didn't really know at that instant where to start. So I said to her, so if you were at your best, what would you do right now? And she said, oh, well, I'd make a list and I'd prioritize it, and then I'd do the first thing on the list. So, and not think about everything, just think about the first thing so I wouldn't be overwhelmed. Sounded to me like a great plan, so she could go ahead with that. At stage five, maintenance, the kinds of powerful questions you would ask are, what will recharge your batteries? How far have you come? What did it take to get here? What does it take to maintain? And who have you become? So sometimes in coaching academics, it's important with people in the maintenance stage to look at not only what progress they've made, but how they got there and what it will take to maintain that progress. For instance, somebody who's trying to write some papers or put together a tenure file or write a dissertation often finds it helpful to think about what the transferable skills are that they've learned as they've been working on this that they can then use in another project that they're going to take on, another project of their academic career. So I think that those are some good examples of powerful questions, and I'm going to turn this back over to Hillary for some more comments.
Well, mainly I would just like you to think about who the academics are that you know, and what is it that they need to be thinking about? What stage are they in? Do they need to be moving from contemplation to action by actually starting the writing process, either on their dissertation or an article or on a book? I've worked with one professor who's an academic librarian to put together a post-tenure review notebook, which started out as basically a pile of paper on a bookshelf with no sense of organization at all. But she knew what needed to be done. She'd done it in the past to get her tenure. So once we set a system in place for her, it became nothing more than maintenance of the new habit of putting things exactly where they belong so that the post-tenure review process was actually painless. That's really it for today. Thank you for listening. This is Hillary Hutchinson in Charleston, South Carolina.
And Mary Beth Averill in Eugene, Oregon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.